aforetime. Two of the hounds were sniffing around the door as they re-emerged. Other dogs ranged through the village. Chet was cursing them loudly, his voice thick with the anger he never seemed to put aside. The light filtering through the red leaves of the weirwood made the boils on his face look even more inflamed than usual. When he saw John, his eyes narrowed. There was no love lost between them. The other houses had yielded no wisdom.
"Gone!"
cried Mormont's raven, flapping up into the weirwood to perch above them.
"Gone! Gone! Gone!"
There were wildlings at White Tree only a year ago. Thorin Smallwood looked more a lord than Mormont did, clad in Sir Jeremy Riker's gleaming black mail and embossed breastplate. His heavy cloak was richly trimmed with sable and clasped with the crossed hammers of the Rikers, wrought in silver. Sir Jeremy's cloak once, but the White had claimed Sir Jeremy, and the Night's Watch wasted nothing.
"A year ago, Robert was king, and the realm was at peace," declared Jarman Buckwell, the square, stolid man who commanded the scouts. "Much can change in a year's time."
"One thing hasn't changed," Sir Maladar Locke insisted. "Fewer wildlings mean fewer worries. I won't mourn, whatever's become of them. Raiders and murderers, a lot of them."
John heard a rustling from the red leaves above. Two branches parted, and he glimpsed a little man moving from limb to limb as easily as a squirrel. Bedwick stood no more than 5 feet tall, but the grey streaks in his hair showed his age. The other rangers called him Giant. He sat in the fork of the tree over their heads and said,
"There's water to the north, a lake might be. A few flint hills rising to the west, not very high. Nothing else to see, my lords."
"We might camp here tonight," Smallwood suggested. The old bear glanced up, searching for a glimpse of sky through the pale limbs and red leaves of the weirwood.
"No," he declared. "Giant, how much daylight remains to us?"
3 hours, my lord."
"We'll press on north," Mormont decided. "If we reach this lake, we can make camp by the shore. Perchance catch a few fish. John, fetch me a paper. It's past time I wrote to Maester Aemon."
John found the parchment, quill, and ink in his saddlebag and brought them to the Lord Commander.
"At White Tree," Mormont scrawled, "the fourth village, all empty. The wildlings are gone.
Find Tarly and see that he gets this on its way," he said as he handed John the message.
When he whistled, the raven came flapping down to land on his horse's head.
"Corn,"
the raven suggested, bobbing. The horse whickered. John mounted his garron, wheeled him about, and trotted off. Beyond the shade of the great weirwood, the men of the Night's Watch stood beneath lesser trees, tending their horses, chewing strips of salt beef, pissing, scratching, and talking. When the command was given to move out again, the talk died, and they climbed back into their saddles. Jarman Buckwell's scouts rode out first, with the vanguard under Thorin Smallwood heading the column proper. Then came the old bear with the main force, Sir Maladore Locke with the baggage train and pack horses, and finally Sir Otten Withers and the rear guard. 200 men all told, with half again as many mounts. By day they followed game trails and stream beds, the rangers' roads, that led them ever deeper into the wilderness of leaf and root. At night they camped beneath a starry sky and gazed up at the comet. The Black Brothers had left Castle Black in good spirits, joking and trading tales, but of late the brooding silence of the wood seemed to have sombered them all. Jests had grown fewer and tempers shorter. No one would admit to being afraid. They were men of the Night's Watch, after all. But John could feel the unease. 4 empty villages, no wildlings anywhere, even the game seemingly fled. The haunted forest had never seemed more haunted. Even veteran rangers agreed.
As he rode, John peeled off his glove to air his burned fingers. Ugly things. He remembered suddenly how he used to muss Aria's hair, his little stick of a sister. He wondered how she was faring. It made him a little sad to think he might never muss her hair again. He began to flex his hand, opening and closing the fingers. If he let his sword hand stiffen and grow clumsy, it might well be the end of him in you. A man needed his sword beyond the wall. John found Samuel Tarley with the other Stuarts watering his horses. He had three to tend, his own mount and two pack horses, each bearing a large wire and wicker cage full of ravens. The birds flapped their wings at John's approach and screamed at him through the bars. A few shrieks sounded suspiciously like words. "Have you been teaching them to talk?" he asked Sam. A few words. Three of them can say snow. "One bird croaking my name was bad enough," said John, "and snow's nothing a black brother wants to hear about." Snow often meant death in the north. "Was there anything in White Tree?"
"Bones, ashes, and empty houses." John handed Sam the roll of parchment. "The old bear wants word sent back to Aemon."
Sam took the bird from one of the cages, stroked its feathers, attached the message, and said, "Fly home now, brave one, home." The raven quacked something unintelligible back at him, and Sam tossed it into the air. Flapping, it beat its way skyward through the trees.
"I wish he could carry me with him."
"Still?"
"Well," said Sam, "yes, but I'm not as frightened as I was, truly. The first night, every time I heard someone getting up to make water, I thought it was wildlings creeping in to slit my throat. I was afraid that if I closed my eyes, I might never open them again. Only, well, dawn came after all."
He managed a wan smile.
"I may be craven, but I'm not stupid. I'm sore and my back aches from riding and from sleeping on the ground, but I'm hardly scared at all. Look."
He held out a hand for John to see how steady it was.
"I've been working on my maps."
The world is strange, John thought. 200 brave men have left the wall, and the only one who was not growing more fearful was Sam, the self-confessed coward. "We'll make a ranger of you yet," he joked. "Next thing, you'll want to be an outrider like Gren. Shall I speak to the old bear?"
"Don't you dare."
Sam pulled up the hood of his enormous black cloak and clambered awkwardly back onto his horse. It was a plough horse, big and slow and clumsy, but better able to bear his weight than the little garrons the rangers rode.
"I had hoped we might stay the night in the village," he said wistfully. "It would be nice to sleep under a roof again."
"Too few roofs for all of us." John mounted again, gave Sam a parting smile, and rode off. The column was well underway, so he swung wide around the village to avoid the worst of the congestion. He had seen enough of White Tree. Ghost emerged from the undergrowth so suddenly that the Garen shied and reared. The White Wolf hunted well away from the line of march, but he was not having much better fortune than the foragers Smallwood sent out after game. The woods were as empty as the villages, Dywin had told him one night around the fire. "We're a large party," John had said. "The game's probably been frightened away by all the noise we make on the march."
"Frightened away by something, no doubt," Dywin said.
Once the horse had settled, Ghost loped along easily beside him. John caught up to Mormont as he was wending his way around a hawthorn thicket.
"Is the bird away?"
the old bear asked. "Yes, my lord. Sam is teaching them to talk." The old bear snorted.
"He'll regret that. Damn things make a lot of noise, but they never say a thing worth hearing."
They rode in silence until John said, "If my uncle
found all these villages empty as well, he would have made it his purpose to learn why. Lord Mormont finished for him.
And it may well be someone or something did not want that known. Well, we'll be 300 when Corrin joins us. Whatever enemy waits out here will not find us so easy to deal with. We will find them, John, I promise you.
Or they will find us, thought John. Arya. The river was a blue-green ribbon shining in the morning sun. Reeds grew thick in the shallows along the banks, and Arya saw a water snake skimming across the surface, ripples spreading out behind it as it went. Overhead, a hawk flew in lazy circles. It seemed a peaceful place, until Cos spotted the dead man.
There, in the reeds,
he pointed, and Arya saw it. The body of a soldier, shapeless and swollen. His sodden green cloak had hung up on a rotted log, and a school of tiny silver fishes were nibbling at his face.
I told you there was bodies, Lommy announced. I could taste them in that water.
When Yoren saw the corpse, he spat.
Dubber, see if he's got anything worth the taking. Mail, knife, a bit of coin, what have you.
He spurred his gelding and rode out into the river. But the horse struggled in the soft mud, and beyond the reeds the water deepened. Yoren rode back angry, his horse covered in brown slime up to the knees.
We won't be crossing here. Cos, you'll come with me upriver, look for a ford. What? Geraint, you go downstream. The rest of you, wait here. Put a guard out.
Dobber found a leather purse in the dead man's belt. Inside were four coppers and a little hank of blonde hair tied with a red ribbon. Lummi and Tarba stripped naked and went wading, and Lummi scooped up handfuls of slimy mud and threw them at Hot Pie, shouting, Mud Pie! Mud Pie! In the back of their wagon, Roar cursed and threatened and told them to unchain him while Yoren was gone, but no one paid him any mind. Kurtz caught a fish with his bare hands. Arya saw how he did it, standing over a shallow pool, calm as still water, his hand darting out quick as a snake when the fish swam near. It didn't look as hard as catching cats. Fish didn't have claws. It was midday when the others returned. Woth reported a wooden bridge half a mile downstream, but someone had burned it up. Yoren peeled a sour leaf off the bale.
Might be we could swim the horses over, maybe the donkeys, but there's no way we'll get those wagons across. And there's smoke to the north and west, more fires. Could be this side of the river's the place we want to be.
He picked up a long stick and drew a circle in the mud, a line trailing down from it.
That's God's Eye, with the river flowing south. We're here.
He poked a hole beside the line of the river under the circle.
We can't go west of the lake like I thought. East takes us back to the King's Road.
He moved the stick up to where the line and circle met.
Near as I recall, there's a town here. The old fast stone, and there's a lordling got his seat there too. Just a tower house, but he'll have a guard. Might be a night or two. We follow the river north. Should be there before dark. They'll have boats, so I mean to sell all we got and hire us one.
He drew the stick up through the circle of the lake from bottom to top.
Gods be good, we'll find a wind and sail across the God's Eye to Harrentown.
He thrust the point down at the top of the circle.
We can buy new mounts there, or else take shelter at Harrenhal. That's Lady Wendt's seat, and she's always been a friend of the Watch.
Hot Pie's eyes got wide.
There's ghosts in Harrenhal.
Yaren spat.
There's for your ghosts.
He tossed the stick down in the mud.
Mount up.
Arya was remembering the stories old Nan used to tell of Harrenhal. Evil King Harren had walled himself up inside, so Aegon unleashed his dragons and turned the castle into a pyre. Nan said that fiery spirits still haunted the blackened towers. Sometimes men went to sleep safe in their beds and were found dead in the morning, all burnt up. Arya didn't really believe that, and anyhow, it all happened a long time ago. Hot Pie was being silly. It wouldn't be ghosts at Harrenhal, it would be knights. Arya could reveal herself to Lady Went, and the knights would escort her home and keep her safe. That was what knights did. They kept you safe, especially women. Maybe Lady Went would even help the crying girl. The river track was no king's road, yet it was not half bad for what it was, and for once the wagons rolled along smartly. They saw the first house, an hour shy of evenfall, a snug little thatch-roofed cottage surrounded by fields of wheat. Yaren rode out ahead, helloing, but got no answer.
It might be, or hiding. Dubba, Ray, with me.
The three men went into the cottage.
Potts is gone. No sign of any coin laid by.
Yaren muttered when they returned.
No animals. Run, most like. Might be we met him on the King's Road.
At least the house and field had not been burned, and there were no corpses about. Tarba found a garden out back, and they pulled some onions and radishes and filled a sack with cabbages before they went on their way. A little further up the road, they glimpsed a forester's cabin surrounded by old trees and neatly stacked logs ready for the splitting, and later a ramshackle stilt house leaning over the river on poles 10 feet tall, both deserted. They passed more fields, wheat and corn and barley ripening in the sun. But here there were no men sitting in trees nor walking the rows with scythes. Finally, the town came into view, a cluster of white houses spread out around the walls of the Holdfast, a big sept with a shingled wooden roof, the Lord's Tower House sitting on a small rise to the west, and no sign of any people anywhere. Yaren sat on his horse, frowning through his tangle of beard.
Don't like it, he said, but there it is. We'll go have us a look, a careful look. See, maybe there's some folk hiding. Might be they left a boat behind, or some weapons we can use.
The Black Brother left 10 to guard the wagons and the whimpery little girl, and split the rest of them into 4 groups of 5 to search the town.
Keep your eyes and ears open, he warned them,
before he rode off to the tower house to see if there was any sign of the lordling or his guards. Arya found herself with Gendry, Hot Pie, and Lummy. Squat, kettle-bellied Woth had pulled an oar on a galley once, which made him the next best thing they had to a sailor. So Yoren told him to take them down to the lakefront and see if they could find a boat. As they rode between the silent white houses, goose prickles crawled up Arya's arms. This empty town frightened her, almost as much as the burnt Holdfast where they'd found the crying girl and the one-armed woman. Why would people run off and leave their houses and everything? What could scare them so much? The sun was low to the west, and the houses cast long, dark shadows. A sudden clap of sound made Arya reach for needle, but it was only a shutter banging in the wind. After the open river shore, the closeness of the town unnerved her. When she glimpsed the lake ahead, between houses and trees, Arya put her knees into a horse, galloping past Woth and Gendry. She burst out onto the grassy sward beside the pebbled shore. The setting sun made the tranquil surface of the water shimmer like a sheet of beaten copper.
It was the biggest lake she'd ever seen, with no hint of a far shore. She saw a rambling inn to her left, built out over the water on heavy wooden pilings. To her right, a long pier jutted into the lake, and there were other docks farther east, wooden fingers reaching out from the town. But the only boat in view was an upside-down rowboat abandoned on the rocks beneath the inn, its bottom thoroughly rotted out. "They're gone," Arya said, dejected. "What would they do now?"
"There's an inn," Lummi said when the others rode up. "Do you think they've left any food or ale?"
"Let's go see," Hot Pie suggested.
"Never mind about no inn," snapped Woth. "Yorin said we're to find a boat." They took the boats. Somehow Arya knew it was true. They could search the whole town, and they'd find no more than the upside-down rowboat. Despondent, she climbed off her horse and knelt by the lake. The water lapped softly around her legs.
A few lantern bugs were coming out, their little lights blinking on and off. The green water was warm as tears, but there was no salt in it. It tasted of summer and mud and growing things. Arya plunged her face down into it to wash off the dust and dirt and sweat of the day. When she leaned back, the trickles ran down the back of her neck and under her collar. They felt good. She wished she could take off her clothes and swim, gliding through the warm water like a skinny pink otter. Maybe she could swim all the way to Winterfell. Woth was shouting at her to help search. So she did, peering into boathouses and sheds while her horse grazed along the shore. They found some sails, some nails, buckets of tar gone hard, and a mother cat with a litter of newborn kittens, but no boats. The town was as dark as any forest when Yoren and the others reappeared.
"Tower's empty," he said. "Lord's gone off to fight, maybe, or to get his small folk to safety, no telling. Not all so big left in town, but we'll eat. Saw a goose running loose, and some chickens, and there's good fish in the God's Eye."
"The boats are gone," Arya reported.
We could patch the bottom of that rowboat," said Cos.
"Might do for four of us," Yorin said.
"There's nails," Lummi pointed out, "and there's trees all around. We could build us all boats."
Yorin spat.
"You know anything about boat building, Dyer's boy?"
Lummi looked blank.
"A raft," suggested Gendry. "Anyone can build a raft and long poles for pushing."
Yorin looked thoughtful.
"Lake's too deep to pole across, but if we stay to the shallows near shore, it'd mean leaving the wagons. Might be that's best. I'll sleep on it."
"Can we stay at the inn?" Lummi asked.
"We'll stay in the old fast with the gates barred,"
the old man said.
"I like the feel of stone walls about me when I sleep."
Arya could not keep quiet. "We shouldn't stay here," she blurted. "The people didn't. They all ran off, even their lord."
"Arry's scared," Lummi announced, Bray in laughter.
"I'm not," she slapped back, "but they were."
"Smart boy," said Yorin. "Thing is, the folks who lived here were at war, like it or no. We're not. Night's watch takes no part. So, no man's our enemy."
"And no man's our friend," she thought. But this time, she held her tongue. Lummi and the rest were looking at her, and she did not want to seem craven in front of them. The Holdfast gates were studded with iron nails. Within, they found a pair of iron bars the size of saplings, with post holes in the ground and metal brackets on the gate. When they slotted the bars through the brackets, they made a huge X brace. It was no Red Keep, Yoren announced, when they'd explored the Holdfast, top to bottom, but it was better than most, and should do for a night well enough. The walls were rough, unmortared stone,
10 feet high, with a wooden catwalk inside the battlements. There was a postern gate to the north, and Garin discovered a trap under the straw in the old wooden barn leading to a narrow, winding tunnel. He followed it a long way under the earth and came out by the lake. Joran had them roll a wagon on top of the trap to make certain no one came in that way. He divided them into three watches and sent Tarba, Kurtz, and Kotjak off to the abandoned tower house to keep an eye out from on high. Kurtz had a hunting horn to sound if danger threatened. They drove their wagons and animals inside and barred the gates behind them. The barn was a ramshackle thing, large enough to hold half the animals in the town. The haven, where the town folk would shelter in times of trouble, was even larger, low and long and built of stone, with a thatched roof. Koss went out the postern gate and brought the goose back, and two chickens as well, and Joran allowed a cook fire. There was a big kitchen inside the holdfast, though all the pots and kettles had been taken. Gendry, Dubba, and Arya drew cook duty. Dubba told Arya to pluck the fowl while Gendry split wood. "Why can't I split the wood?" she asked, but no one listened. Sullenly, she set to plucking a chicken while Joran sat on the end of the bench sharpening the edge of his dirk with a whetstone. When the food was ready, Arya ate a chicken leg and a bit of onion. No one talked much, not even Lummi. Gendry went off by himself afterwards, polishing his helm with a look on his face like he wasn't even there. The crying girl whimpered and wept, but when Hot Pie offered her a bit of goose, she gobbled it down and looked for more. Arya drew second watch, so she found a straw pallet in the haven. Sleep did not come easy, so she borrowed Joran's stone and set to honing needle. Sirio Farrell had said that a dull blade was like a lame horse. Hot Pie squatted on the pallet beside her, watching her work. "Where'd you get your good sword like that?" he asked. When he saw the look she gave him, he raised his hands defensively. "I never said you stole it, and just wanted to know where you got it is all." "My brother gave it to me," she muttered.
"I never knew you had no brother."
Arya paused to scratch under her shirt. There were fleas in the straw, though she couldn't see why a few more would bother her. "I have lots of brothers."
"You do? Are they bigger than you or littler?"
"I shouldn't be talking like this. Joran said I should keep my mouth shut." "Bigger," she lied. "They have swords too, big, long swords, and they showed me how to kill people who bother me."
"I was talking, not bothering."
Hot Pie went off and left her alone, and Arya curled up on her pallet. She could hear the crying girl from the far side of the haven. I wish she'd just be quiet. Why does she have to cry all the time? She must have slept, though she never remembered closing her eyes. She dreamed a wolf was howling, and the sound was so terrible that it woke her at once. Arya sat up on her pallet with her heart thumping.
"Hot Pie, wake up!"
She scrambled to her feet.
"Woth! Gendry, didn't you hear?"
She pulled on a boot. All around her, men and boys stirred and crawled from their pallets.
"What's wrong?"
Hot Pie asked.
"Hear what?"
Gendry wanted to know.
"Annie had a bad dream,"
someone else said.
"No, I heard it," she insisted. "A wolf."
"Harry has wolves in his head,"
sneered Lummi.
"Let them hell," Garin said. "They're out there. We're in here."
Woth agreed.
"Never saw no wolf could storm a hole fast,"
Hot Pie was saying.
"I never heard nothing."
"It was a wolf,"
she shouted at them as she yanked on her second boot. "Something's wrong. Someone's coming.
Get up."
Before they could hoot her down again, the sound came shuddering through the night. Only it was no wolf this time. It was Kurz blowing his hunting horn, sounding danger. In a heartbeat,
All of them were pulling on clothes and snatching for whatever weapons they owned. Arya ran for the gate as the horn sounded again. As she dashed past the barn, Biter threw himself furiously against his chains, and Jake and Hagar called out from the back of their wagon,
"Boy, sweet boy, is it war? Red war? Boy, free us! A man can fight, boy!"
She ignored him and plunged on. By then she could hear horses and shouts beyond the wall.
She scrambled up onto the catwalk. The parapets were a bit too high and Arya a bit too short. She had to wedge her toes into the holes between the stones to see over. For a moment, she thought the town was full of lantern bugs. Then she realized they were men with torches, galloping between the houses. She saw a roof go up, flames licking at the belly of the night with hot orange tongues as the thatch caught. Another followed, and then another, and soon there were fires blazing everywhere. Gendry climbed up beside her, wearing his helm.
"How many?"
Arya tried to count, but they were riding too fast, torches spinning through the air as they flung them.
100, she said. 200, I don't know.
Over the roar of the flames, she could hear shouts.
They'll come for us soon.
There, Gendry said, pointing. A column of riders moved between the burning buildings toward the Holdfast. Firelight glittered off metal helms and spattered their mail and plate with orange and yellow highlights. One carried a banner on a tall lance. She thought it was red, but it was hard to tell in the night with the fires roaring all around. Everything seemed red or black or orange. The fire leapt from one house to another. Arya saw a tree consumed, the flames creeping across its branches until it stood against the night in robes of living orange. Everyone was awake now, manning the catwalks or struggling with the frightened animals below. She could hear Yoren shouting commands. Something bumped against her leg, and she glanced down to discover the crying girl clutching her.
"Get away!" She wrenched her leg free. "What are you doing up here? Run and hide somewhere, you stupid..."
She shoved the girl away. The riders reined up before the gates.
"You, in the Holdfast!"
shouted a knight in a tall helm with a spiked crest.
"Open, in the name of the king!"
"Aye, and which king is that?"
Olrason yelled back down before Wath cuffed him into silence. Yoren climbed the battlements beside the gate, his faded black cloak tied to a wooden staff.
"You men hold down here," he shouted. "The town folk's gone."
"And who are you, old man? One of Lord Beric's cravens?"
called the knight in the spiked helm.
"If that fat fool Thoris is in there, ask him how he likes these fires."
"Got no such man here,"
Yoren shouted back.
"Only some lads for the watch. Got no party, you war."
He hoisted up the staff so they could see the color of his cloak.
"Have a look. That's black for the night's watch."
"Or black for House Dondarrion,"
called the man who bore the enemy banner. Arya could see its colors more clearly now in the light of the burning town, a golden lion on red.
"Lord Beric's sigil is a purple lightning bolt on a black field."
Suddenly, Arya remembered the morning she had thrown the orange in Sansa's face and gotten juice all over her stupid ivory silk gown. There had been some southern lordling at the tourney. Her sister's stupid friend Jane was in love with him. He had a lightning bolt on his shield, and her father had sent him out to behead the Hound's brother. It seemed 1,000 years ago now. Something that had happened to a different person in a different life. To Arya Stark, the Hand's daughter, not Arry, the orphan boy. How would Arry know lords and such?
"Are you blind, man?"
Yoren waved his staff back and forth, making the cloak ripple.
"You see a bloody lightning bolt?"
"By night, all banners look black,"
the knight in the spiked helm observed.
"Open, or we'll know you for outlaws in league with the king's enemies."
Yoren spat.
Who's got your command?
I do.
The reflections of burning houses glimmered dully on the armor of his warhorse as the others parted to let him pass. He was a stout man with a manticore on his shield, an ornate scrollwork crawling across his steel breastplate. Through the open visor of his helm, a face pale and piggy peeped up.
Sir Aimery Leitch, bannerman to Lord Tywin Lannister of Casterly Rock. The hand of the king, the true king, Joffrey.
He had a high, thin voice.
In his name, I command you to open these gates.
All around them, the town burned. The night air was full of smoke, and the drifting red embers outnumbered the stars. Yorin scowled.
Don't see the need. Do what you want to the town. It's naught to me. But leave us be. We're no foes to you.
Look with your eyes. Arya wanted to shout at the men below. Can't they see we're no lords or knights? She whispered. I don't think they care, Arya, Gendry whispered back. Then she looked at Sir Aimery's face, the way Sirio had taught her to look, and she saw that he was right.
If you are no traitors, open your gates, Sir Aimery called. We'll make certain you're telling a true and be on our way.
Yoren was chewing sour leaf.
Told you. No one here but us. You got my word on that.
The knight in the spike helm laughed.
The crow gives us his word. You lost, old man,
mocked one of the spearmen. The wall's a long way north of here.
I command you, once more, in King Joffrey's name, to prove the loyalty you profess and open these gates, said Sir Aimery.
For a long moment, Yoren considered, chewing. Then he spat.
Don't think I will. So be it. You defy the king's command, and so proclaim yourself rebels, black cloaks or no.
Got me young boys in here,
Yoren shouted down.
Young boys and old men die the same.
Sir Aimery raised a languid fist, and a spear came hurtling from the fire-bright shadows behind. Yoren must have been the target, but it was Woth beside him who was hit. The spearhead went in his throat and exploded out the back of his neck, dark and wet. Woth grabbed at the shaft and fell boneless from the walk. Storm the walls and kill them all, Sir Aimery said in a bored voice. More spears flew. Arya yanked down Hot Pie by the back of his tunic. From outside came the rattle of armor, the scrape of swords on scabbards, the banging of spears on shields, mingled with curses and the hoofbeats of racing horses. A torch sailed spinning over their heads, trailing fingers of fire as it thumped down in the dirt of the yard.
Blades! Yoren shouted. Spread apart! Defend the wall wherever they hit! Kos, Ureg, hold the postern. Lumi, pull that spear out of Woth and get up where he was.
Hot Pie dropped his short sword when he tried to unsheath it. Arya shoved the blade back into his hand.
I don't know how to sword fight, he said, white-eyed.
It's easy, Arya said, but the lie died in her throat as a hand grasped the top of the parapet. She saw it by the light of the burning town, so clear that it was as if time had stopped. The fingers were blunt, calloused. Wiry black hairs grew between the knuckles. There was dirt under the nail of the thumb. Fear cuts deeper than swords, she remembered, as the top of a pot helm loomed up behind the hand. She slashed down hard, and needles, castle-forged steel, bit into the grasping fingers between the knuckles.
Winterfell!
She screamed. Blood spurted, fingers flew, and the helm face vanished as suddenly as it had appeared.
Behind!
Hot Pie yelled. Arya whirled. The second man was bearded and helmetless, his dirk between his teeth, to leave both hands free for climbing. As he swung his leg over the parapet, she dove her point at his eyes. Needle never touched him. He reeled backward and fell. I hope he falls on his face and cuts off his tongue.
Watch them, not me, she screamed at Hot Pie.
The next time someone tried to climb their part of the wall, the boy hacked at his hands with his short sword until the man dropped away. Sir Amory had no ladders, but the whole fast walls were rough cut and unmortared, easy to climb, and there seemed to be no end to the foes. For each one Arya cut or stabbed or shoved back, another was coming over the wall. The knight in the spiked helm reached the rampart, but Yoren tangled his black banner around his spike and forced the point of his dirk through his armor while the man was fighting the cloth. Every time Arya looked up, more torches were flying, trailing long tongues of flame that lingered behind her eyes. She saw a gold lion on a red banner and thought of Joffrey, wishing he was here so she could drive needle through his sneery face. When four men assaulted the gate with axes, Koss shot them down with arrows, one by one. Dobber wrestled a man off the walk, and Lummi smashed his head with a rock before he could rise, and hooted until he saw the knife in Dobber's belly and realized he wouldn't be getting up either. Arya jumped over a dead boy no older than John, lying with his arm cut off. She didn't think she'd done it, but she wasn't sure. She heard Kyle beg for mercy before a knight with a wasp on his shield smashed his face with a spiked mace. Everything smelled of blood and smoke and iron and piss, but after a time it seemed like that was only one smell. She never saw how the skinny man got over the wall, but when he did, she fell on him with Gendry and Hot Pie. Gendry's sword shattered on the man's helm, tearing it off his head. Underneath, he was bald and scared-looking, with missing teeth and a speckly grey beard. But even as she was feeling sorry for him, she was killing him, shouting, "Winterfell! Winterfell!" while Hot Pie screamed, "Hot Pie!" beside her as he hacked at the man's scrawny neck. When the skinny man was dead, Gendry stole his sword and leapt downward into the yard to fight some more. Arya looked past him and saw steel shadows running through the holdfast, firelight shining off mail and blades, and she knew that they'd gotten over the wall somewhere or broken through at the postern. She jumped down beside Gendry, landing the way Sirio had taught her. The night rang to the clash of steel and the cries of the wounded and dying. For a moment, Arya stood uncertain, not knowing which way to go. Death was all around her. And then Yoren was there, shaking her, screaming in her face. "Boy," he yelled, the way he always yelled it. "Get out. It's done. We've lost. Herd up all you can. You and him and the others, the boys. You get them out, now." "How?" Arya said. "That trap," he screamed, "under the barn." Quick as that, he was gone, off to fight, sword in hand. Arya grabbed Gendry by the arm. "He said go," she shouted. "The barn, the way out." Through the slits of his helm, the bull's eyes shone with reflected fire. He nodded. They called Hot Pie down from the wall and found Lummi Greenhands where he lay bleeding from a spear thrust through his calf. They found Geron too, but he was hurt too bad to move. As they were running toward the barn, Arya spied the crying girl sitting in the middle of the chaos, surrounded by smoke and slaughter. She grabbed her by the hand and pulled her to her feet as the others raced ahead. The girl wouldn't walk, even when slapped. Arya dragged her with her right hand while she held Needle in the left. Ahead, the night was sullen red. "The barn's on fire," she thought. Flames were licking up its side from where a torch had fallen on straw, and she could hear the screaming of the animals trapped within. Hot Pie stepped out of the barn. "Harry, come on! Lummi's gone! Leave her if she won't come!" Stubbornly, Arya dragged all the harder, pulling the crying girl along. Hot Pie scuttled back inside, abandoning them. But Gendry came back, the fire shining so bright on his polished helm that the horn seemed to glow orange. He ran to them and hoisted the crying girl up over his shoulder. Run! Rushing through the barn doors was like running into a furnace. The air was swirling with smoke. The back wall, a sheet of fire ground to roof. Their horses and donkeys were kicking and rearing and screaming. The poor animals, Arya thought. Then she saw the wagon and the three men manacled to its bed. Biter was flinging himself against the chains, blood running down his arms from where the irons clasped his wrists. Rorg screamed curses, kicking at the wood. Boy! Called Jake and Agar. Sweet boy! The open trap was only a few feet ahead, but the fire was spreading fast, consuming the old wood and dry straw faster than she would have believed. Arya remembered the hound's horrible burned face. Tunnel's narrow, Gendry shouted. How do we get her through? Pull her, Arya said. Push her. Good boys, kind boys, called Jake and Agar, coughing. Get the fucking chains off, Rorg screamed. Gendry ignored him. You go first, then her, then me. Hurry, it's a long way. When you split the firewood, Arya remembered, where did you leave the axe? Out by the haven. He spared a glance for the chain men. I'd save the donkeys first. There's no time. You take her, she yelled. You get her out. You do it. The fire beat at her back with red-hot wings as she fled the burning barn. It felt blessedly cool outside, but men were dying all around her. She saw Cuss throw down his blade to yield, and she saw them kill him where he stood. Smoke was everywhere. There was no sign of Yoren, but the axe was where Gendry had left it, by the woodpile outside the haven. As she wrenched it free, a mailed hand grabbed her arm. Spinning, Arya drove the head of the axe hard between his legs. She never saw his face, only the dark blood seeping between the links of his hauberk. Going back into the barn was the hardest thing she ever did. Smoke was pouring out of the open door like a writhing black snake, and she could hear the screams of the poor animals inside, donkeys and horses and men. She chewed her lip and darted through the door, crouching low where the smoke wasn't quite so thick. A donkey was caught in a ring of fire, shrieking in terror and pain. She could smell the stench of burning hair. The roof was gone up too, and things were falling down, pieces of flaming wood and bits of straw and hay. Arya put a hand over her mouth and nose. She couldn't see the wagon for the smoke, but she could still hear Biter screaming. She crawled toward the sound. And then a wheel was looming over her. The wagon jumped and moved half a foot when Biter threw himself against his chains again. Jaqen saw her, but it was too hard to breathe, let alone talk. She threw the axe into the wagon. Rorg caught it and lifted it above his head, rivers of sooty sweat pouring down his noseless face. Arya was running, coughing. She heard the steel crash through the old wood, and again, again. An instant later came a crack as loud as thunder, and the bottom of the wagon came ripping loose in an explosion of splinters. Arya rolled headfirst into the tunnel and dropped 5 feet. She got dirt in her mouth, but she didn't care. The taste was fine. The taste was mud and water and worms and life. Under the earth, the air was cool and dark. Above was nothing but blood and roaring red and choking smoke and the screams of dying horses. She moved her belt around so Needle would not be in her way and began to crawl. A dozen feet down the tunnel, she heard the sound, like the roar of some monstrous beast, and a cloud of hot smoke and black dust came billowing up behind her, smelling of hell. Arya held her breath and kissed the mud on the floor of the tunnel and cried. For whom, she could not say. Tyrion. The Queen was not disposed to wait on Varys. Treason is vile enough, she declared furiously, but this is barefaced, naked villainy, and I do not need that mincing eunuch to tell me what must be done with villains. Tyrion took the letters from his sister's hand and compared them side by side. There were two copies, the words exactly alike, though they had been written by different hands.
Maester Franken received the first missive at Castle Stokeworth, Grandmaester Pycelle explained. The second copy came through Lord Giles.
Littlefinger fingered his beard.
If Stannis bothered with them, it's past certain every other lord in the Seven Kingdoms saw a copy as well.
I want these letters burned, every one, Cersei declared. No hint of this must reach my son's ears or my father's.
I imagine father's heard more than a hint by now, Tyrion said dryly. Doubtless Stannis sent a bird to Casterly Rock and another to Harrenhal. As for burning the letters, to what point? The song is sung, the wine is spilled, the wench is pregnant, and this is not as dire as it seems in truth.
Cersei turned on him in green-eyed fury. Are you utterly witless? Did you read what he says? The boy, Joffrey, he calls him, and he dares to accuse me of incest, adultery, and treason.
Only because you're guilty?
It was astonishing to see how ugly Cersei could wax over accusations she knew perfectly well to be true.
If we lose the war, she ought to take up mummery. She has a gift for it.
Tyrion waited until she was done and said, Stannis must have some pretext to justify his rebellion. What did you expect him to write? Joffrey is my brother's true-born son and heir, but I mean to take his throne for all that. I will not suffer to be called a whore.
Why, sister, he never claims Jaime paid you?
Tyrion made a show of glancing over the writing again. There had been some niggling phrase.
Done in the light of the Lord, he read. A queer choice of words, that.
Pycelle cleared his throat.
These words often appear in letters and documents from the free cities. They mean no more than, let us say, written in the sight of God, the God of the Red Priests. It is their usage, I do believe.
Varys told us some years past that Lady Selyse had taken up with the Red Priest. Littlefinger reminded them. Tyrion tapped the paper.
And now it would seem her Lord Husband has done the same. We can use that against him. Urge the High Septon to reveal how Stannis has turned against the gods as well as his rightful king.
Yes, the Queen said impatiently. But first, we must stop this filth from spreading further. The council must issue an edict. Any man heard speaking of incest or calling Joff a bastard should lose his tongue for it.
A prudent measure, said Grand Maester Pycelle, his chain of office clinking as he nodded.
A folly, sighed Tyrion. When you tear out a man's tongue, you are not proving him a liar. You're only telling the world that you fear what he might say. So what would you have us do? His sister demanded.
Very little. Let them whisper. They'll grow bored with the tale soon enough. Any man with a thimble of sense will see it for a clumsy attempt to justify usurping the crown. Does Stannis offer proof? How could he, when it never happened?
Tyrion gave his sister his sweetest smile. That so, she had to say, still... Your Grace, your brother has the right of this. Petar Baelish steepled his fingers.
If we attempt to silence this talk, we only lend it credence. Better to treat it with contempt, like the pathetic lie it is. And meantime, fight fire with fire.
Cersei gave him a measured look.
What sort of fire?
A tale of somewhat the same nature, perhaps, but more easily believed. Lord Stannis has spent most of his marriage apart from his wife. Not that I fault him. I'd do the same if I were married to Lady Selyse. Nonetheless, if we put it about that her daughter is base-born and Stannis a cuckold, well, the small folk are always eager to believe the worst of their lords, particularly those as stern, sour, and prickly proud as Stannis Baratheon. He's never been much loved, that's true. Cersei considered a moment. So we pay him back in his own coin. Yes, I like this. Who can we name as Lady Selyse's lover? She has two brothers, I believe, and one of her uncles has been with her on Dragonstone all this time. Sir Axel Florent is her castellan. Loath as Tyrion was to admit it, Littlefinger's scheme had promise. Stannis had never been enamoured of his wife, but he was bristly as a hedgehog when his honour was concerned and mistrustful by nature. If they could sow discord between him and his followers, it could only help their cause. The child has the Florent years, I'm told. Littlefinger gestured languidly. A trade envoy from Lys once observed to me that Lord Stannis must love his daughter very well, since he directed hundreds of statues of her all along the walls of Dragonstone. My lord, I had to tell him, those are gargoyles. He chuckled. Sir Axel might well serve for Shireen's father, but in my experience, the more bizarre and shocking a tale, the more apt it is to be repeated. Stannis keeps an especially grotesque fool, a lackwit with a tattooed face. Grand Maester Pycelle gaped at him aghast. Surely you don't mean to suggest that Lady Selyse would bring a fool into her bed? You'd have to be a fool to want to bed Selyse Florent, said Littlefinger. Doubtless Patchface reminded her of Stannis, and the best lies contain within them nuggets of truth, enough to give a listener pause. As it happens, this fool is utterly devoted to the girl and follows her everywhere. They even look somewhat alike. Shireen has a mottled, half-frozen face as well. Pycelle was lost. But that is from the grayscale that nearly killed her as a babe, poor thing. I like my tale better, said Littlefinger, and so will the small folk. Most of them believe that if a woman eats rabbit while pregnant, the child will be born with long, floppy ears. Cersei smiled the sort of smile she customarily reserved for Jaime. Lord Petar, you are a wicked creature. Thank you, Your Grace. And a most accomplished liar, Tyrion added less warmly. This one is more dangerous than I knew, he reflected. Littlefinger's grey-green eyes met the dwarf's mismatched stare with no hint of unease. We all have our gifts, my lord. The queen was too caught up in her revenge to take note of the exchange. Cuckolded by a half-wit fool? Stannis will be laughed at in every wine sink this side of the narrow sea. The story should not come from us, Tyrion said, or it will be seen for a self-serving lie. Which it is, to be sure. Once more, Littlefinger supplied the answer. Whores love to gossip, and as it happens, I own a brothel or three, and no doubt Varys can plant seeds in the alehouses and pot shops. Varys? Cersei said, frowning. Where is Varys? I have been wondering about that myself, Your Grace. The spider spins his secret webs day and night, Grand Maester Pycelle said ominously. I mistrust that one, my lords. And he speaks so kindly of you. Tyrion pushed himself off his chair. As it happened, he knew what the eunuch was about, but it was nothing the other councillors needed to hear. Pray excuse me, my lords. Other business calls. Cersei was instantly suspicious. King's business? Or nothing you need trouble yourself about? I'll be the judge of that.
Would you spoil my surprise? Tyrion said. I'm having a gift made for Joffrey. A little chain.
What does he need with another chain?